Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Hello and welcome to the Bloomberg Business of Sports podcast, where we explore some of the big money issues in the world of sports. I'm Michael Barr.
I'm Scarlett Fu.
And I'm Damian Sassauer.
Oh my, look who we have from the Atlanta Hawks, Senior VP of Finance, Lester Jones. We're talking basketball. Hello, Lester Jones. Welcome to the Bloomberg Business of Sports.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Let's start with probably the big story that we're hearing that the NBA is thinking now of. I guess the way you want to call it is a hard cap spending limit in a new agreement with the NBPA. What have you heard about that? Do you agree with it? What are your thoughts?
Oh, yeah. So it is a hot topic. I will say there's a lot of uncertainty around, you know, whether they can actually achieve it or not. Initial conversations definitely been, you know, a little bit of pushback from a player perspective. But, I mean, my personal and individual thoughts would be, I get it, right? So anytime you're entering a season where luxury tax payments are expected to be this astronomical amount and you just don't want teams to continue to jack up spending, you try to go and do something like a hard cap. But I also see the player side where you may, you know, limit the upper earning potential of the guys in the top tier. So, you know, I think both sides have a very good argument, and hopefully they can come to some sort of resolution, you know, with the new CBA looming. So, it's an interesting concept, just depending on which side you fall on. But from a business perspective, you know, player salaries is one of your highest expenses, single line item expense that you have. Mm-hmm. Do you want to manage it? Do you want to go into the tax? You know, you have those conversations all the time. And, you know, a hard cap would pretty much do away with that.
So essentially, as the CFO of the Atlanta Hawks, which is more of a, I guess, a mid-market team as opposed to, say, Golden State, Brooklyn, the Knicks, the LA Clippers. I'm curious to get your take on how inflation is going to affect these negotiations. You mentioned players' salaries is one of the biggest expenses. Clearly, they will keep that in mind. But how do you see this changing the contour of the discussions?
I think it's going to have a significant impact. Anytime you talk in any inflation, you know, area rate that's, you know, depending on what stat you go with, 8 to 10% year over year, that's going to have significant impact to especially a middle market to lower market team where, you know, you already are trying to manage your expenses as best as possible. So when that bubbles up, I think the NBA has to take the position that they represent all 30 teams, right? And so you're going to have 30 different points of view. But for those that are in that middle market, you're really looking at, hey, inflation is going to hurt on top of the fact that basketball-related income is going to go up, but is it going to go up in correlation to inflation? Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't, then, you know, how can you just keep having these astronomical player salaries? So then you start to have and it starts to shape your point of view around, look, this is what's really happening to my bottom line. So you start doing, you know, your cash flow projections on what happens if we do go into, you know, a hard cap, and then what happens if you don't. But it all comes down to inflation. It really does. It's going to have a significant impact on the conversation.
Well, let me first apologize on behalf of Scarlett to Tony Ressler for calling Atlanta a mid-market team. So, Tony, if you're listening out there, you know, we love you.
I'm very New York-centric, so
no, I'm just kidding.
That's how I'm defending it.
So Lester, tell me about how this all changes. I mean, like, you know, you've got to build the Atlanta Hawks. You know, you effectively don't have as much money as some of these other teams like Golden State, like the Brooklyn Nets. You know, what's the strategy there? What are you and Tony talking about? Like, how are you looking to build the Hawks? I mean, we've got Trae Young, DeJounte Murray. I mean, what comes next for the Hawks?
I mean, honestly, I think our liquidity position is actually very strong. So I think that any team that's looking to, you know, potentially go into the tax, you actually have to start years before. And so what you want to do is try to solidify your bottom line and your liquidity position to make sure that you have significant cash on the books to where your business is not handicapped by going into the tax. So the conversations, you know, start years prior. And so if you've been able to successfully manage that bottom line as you're going into it, and yeah, you know, you got Trey and DeJounte, but as you're re-signing guys like, you know, DeAndre Hunter, you know, to their extensions coming off of their rookie deals, you know, everything starts to become a little bit more expensive. So you just try to make sure that as you're growing that top line expense, that there are offsets, right? You have investments, you have other avenues of business that you're able to capitalize off of. These guys also, you know, they bring in significant revenue to the organizations. So you have to leverage that and make sure that how you're able to capitalize on the assets that you have, that your spending is in line with that. And I think that sometimes when teams get out of pocket, it's because they do the reverse, right? They don't manage the cash on their books. They don't manage their bottom line. They jump into the tax, and then they just become, you know, tax latent. Now you're committed. Now you're in it, and you just have to pay those significant expenses and then try to make it up on the back end. So the conversations with Tony are literally around, how can we insulate ourselves and where's our risk? So you want to mitigate risk. Some risk is good risk, but you want to mitigate it as often as possible, but identify those risks. So we just talked about, you know, what's the risk to the plan? What's the risk to the budget? And you manage accordingly.
So many things I want to talk to you about, but one thing I want to bring up is that the Hawks, you made a commitment to working with black and minority-owned businesses. And that was back in 2020. You partnered with the National Black Bank Foundation. Tell us a bit about that and how that has benefited the entire community and your team.
Great question. I think it definitely supports, you know, how we've been able to bolster our bottom line and our liquidity position as well. So back during the time of uncertainty and the league was facing, you know, the country was facing some, you know, sensitivities around civic unrest and just trying to figure out what we can do post, you know, George Floyd. There were a lot of people who were taken to the streets, a lot of people who were voicing their opinions. And as we were out and about in our community, as we were out and about talking to the leaders, you know, we often wondered what more could we do to help bolster our community and help be that community asset. We had a relationship with, you know, Ashley Bell. Ashley, he's the CEO of the new Ready Life platform, but he's also the co-founder of the National Black Foundation. And working with the National Black Banks, when we were asking the question of him as we, you know, are marching side by side as partners, what more could we do? He had an excellent idea, and he pitched to us, you know, going to a syndicate of black banks and, like, you know, looking at our entire portfolio, how can we invest in the community? So we actually moved one of our pieces of debt on our practice facility over to the syndicate of black banks, with Carver State Bank being the lead bank and acting there. And he was phenomenal. I mean, him and his team and the Black Bank Foundation coming together and showing us, look, normal course of business, what we're able to do, what we do anyway. Moving that piece of debt over to them, how it could actually impact the community, how mm-hmm. it could get resources and into the hands of people in community that are underserved or that may not be able to have access to those resources or those funds. So, yes, that was the deal that we were able to execute.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. Those with the ambitious, out-of-reach ideas, begging to become real solutions. They share a vision for how our world and our lives can thrive when bold thinking meets strong silicon. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy through the power of supercomputing. They dream of trust and privacy for all, of advancing and expanding education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to build something better, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
You just described the benefits of that deal. Can you talk a little bit about how the key to getting a yes from the Hawks leadership was to also address the risks, lay them out, and discuss how the risks would be mitigated?
Yes. So, you know, with any business deal that you're going to do, there are going to be risks. And so going into that room and being able to tell ownership, hey, here's the risk of this potential deal. Here's, you know, what could potentially be at stake. But you hit the nail on the head with the mitigation piece, going in with the solution instead of just, you know, the potential problem. And
what were the risks?
So instead of dealing with one, you know, bank where we were servicing our debt, having to go to a syndicate where each of those banks may have limited loan capacity. And so if the maximum loan that, you know, one bank could give you is $10 million, and then other banks are 2.5 and 5 million, we're used to going to a larger bank, right? And a larger bank can give you the debt, $35 million, which is what this deal was, and say, yep, one bank, I'm dealing with one bank, I don't have different customers. You start to look at that and go, well, what happens if one of the banks falls off? What happens if a bank is absorbed in another deal? What happens if, you know, since they have such, you know, low access to those resources, what then? Are we in default? Like looking at your bank covenants, are the bank covenants going to be more stringent because they have less loan capacity and they don't have the assets to be able to extend across their organization? And so you start to talk about those things, because coming outside of the pandemic, bank covenants and on debt were a hot topic for a lot of businesses. And so you want to make sure that you can hit your covenants, you're not going to be in default, and at the same time, the partner that you're dealing with is going to be around to do business for a significant period of time, or at least, you know, the length of the deal. So those were probably two of the biggest risks that, we faced in trying to get the deal done.
Spoken like a former auditor at PwC and Arthur Andersen. Now, Lester, I just have to ask you this. I mean, there are a lot of different avenues for new growth and revenue, you know, obviously the Hawks are looking at. And for me, you know, it's difficult to ignore the emergence of sports betting, of sports gambling, right? And I'm just curious, you know, where that fits into your calculus. You know, do you see opportunities for the Hawks to evolve along with that industry in specific? Or, I mean, like, how are you working with some of these sport books? How are you working with ESPN? How are you working with your partners and collaborating with them to try and build that experience for your audience and for your viewers?
Oh, absolutely. I think that sports betting could have a significant impact on not just the business, but even the community as well. I think we've already started to run, you know, simulations. You're looking at other, you know, teams and states that it's legal, and you start to look at the revenue potential there, it could be pretty significant. And so just trying to understand the entire landscape of it. We've been talking to our partners to make sure that we understand, you know, what are the triggers, what are the risks, what are our potential upside, how can we better educate ourselves to capitalize significantly, you know, hopefully if it's approved in the state of Georgia.
I've always said the thing that changed everything on the landscape of sports, not just the NBA, but the NFL, baseball, and I could go on, the NHL, was fantasy sports. Because now what happened is that a fan is forced not only to be a homer for their own team, is like, you know, rah, rah, all right, go Detroit Pistons, this, that, whatever. But now you got to look at every player.
That's right. You got to root for Trae Young.
Yeah.
You're a Knicks fan rooting for Trae Young. I mean, go figure.
You got to look. And, you know, it's, I think to me, that's the thing that took this, brought sports way into like the extreme mainstream that, you know, that people
it's
are saying.
It's a deeper
like,
level of engagement.
Yeah.
Across the board.
Yeah. I your thoughts about that?
Oh, absolutely. I think you're spot on when you say you're a Knicks fan and you have to root for Trae Young. So do you sit Trae Young when he's playing the Knicks if he's on your fantasy team? Of course you don't. You know, you go, I want Trae to go for 60, but I want the Knicks to win by one, right? And so, like, that awareness across sports only benefits sports. Then you start to have not just, you know, in your local region, you start to have generational fans across the country, because now people are rooting for sports. They're rooting for more individuals as opposed to just, hey, I'm a diehard Hawks fan. Now it's, yeah, I'm a diehard Hawks fan, but I am boosting the overall business of the NBA because I'm going for different players in markets that I perhaps wouldn't have known about prior to fantasy. And so fantasy, I think, is something that you can capitalize on in a more meaningful way, and that you can grow your landscape of the business by, you know, advertising that, putting that out there and letting people know, hey, increase your awareness of the players across these different markets. And I think it will only bring back dividends for the league.
You have the number one advice when you're betting or you're playing fantasy sports, don't bet with your heart, bet with your head. I'm not talking about
take the emotion out of it.
You got to take the emotion out of it, because my wife, who now crossing into NFL, she's a big 49ers fan, and I forgot the game that I bet against the 49ers. She said, "Why did you bet against the 49ers?" I said, "Well, honey, they're not going to win." Now, the sleeping on that couch that night was very good, but after that, and that's the main thing I'm trying to say, Scarlett, is that, you know, like you said, take the emotion out of it. Especially if you're playing fantasy sports or betting.
Spoken like a true expert. I got to ask you, Lester, you mentioned that fantasy allows fans from different cities, different regions, different countries to latch on to players on your team and widen your fan base. Can you give us some demographics, some numbers on what the Atlanta Hawks fan base looks like now as a result of things like fantasy sports, sports betting, all of that?
I'll even take you one step further, and we were able to participate in the global games, and we played the Milwaukee Bucks in Abu Dhabi, right, for preseason. We played two games there, and just the reception that the team received and just the fan base in general, you'll actually be surprised maybe by the fact that our number one fan base is actually in Thailand. And so
Thailand,
of all places, right? And so as we run in those demographics, like I would say prior to the last 3 years, approximately 82% of mentions, follows were in the Southeast region for the Atlanta Hawks. And now, internationally, our uptick has been almost 42%, I would say, across the country and the region as the emergence of Trey, and then now especially with DeJounte and the team coming together, now our mentions are up over 300% across the country. And so just in that, you start to look at it and you start to see, well, where is it coming from? It's coming through platforms such as, you know, the fantasy sports, and you're starting to see more people place a few more bets on the Hawks to cover games and, you know, point spreads and differentials. And so that's coming out of, you know, Vegas primarily. You start to look at that and you're looking at partnering with somebody that is in that space. Those analytics speak for themselves. You're talking triple digit growth and mentions and awareness. It's not a coincidence that you start to see the uptick. I mean, prior to, you know, Trey, it's been a long time since we've had somebody with a top 100 jersey sales in the NBA. And so as Trey starts to break into that upper stratosphere, as now we have DeJounte and he's in that upper stratosphere, you start to look at that, and those analytics, they're pretty compelling.
I'm still stuck on the Thailand thing. I mean, it's only a matter of time before someone signs a big endorsement deal with PTT or Bangkok Decent Medical Services at this point, and playing some exhibition games in Chiang Mai.
Lester, you know, before you go, I have to ask you just one question. You know, yep. Obviously, Tony Ressler, you work closely with him. You know, Grant Hill, he's another owner of the team. Sarah Blakely, Spanx co-founder, you know, she's an owner. Jesse Eisler, my man Jesse Eisler, have you ever run in Driveway to Hell with Jeffrey Eisler? Have you ever done a half marathon with the man himself?
I have not. But Jesse is phenomenal. We also serve on the Atlanta Hawks Foundation board together. And Jesse, he's definitely committed to overall wellness and foundation. And he had an idea. He'd probably get mad for telling, but he had an idea before.
Hopefully it's not a theme song for the Atlanta Hawks. No, I'm just kidding.
No. It was he wanted to do, you know, a marathon event that ended at the arena and give tickets to people who participated in the marathon. And it was like, we probably might want to do it the day before and give them the tickets to the game instead of running to the arena and having them enter.
I love Jesse. He's the best.
Yeah,
that's fantastic.
Atlanta Hawks Senior VP of Finance, Lester Jones, you are so kind to talk with us and lay a whole bunch of knowledge on us on the Bloomberg Business of Sports. Thank you so much, sir, for talking with us.
No problem. Thank you guys for having me.
This has been the Bloomberg Business of Sports podcast, where we explore some of the big money issues in the world of sports. I'm Michael Barr. You can follow me on Twitter at BigBarrSports.
I'm at Scarlett Fu on Twitter.
I'm Damian Sassauer at DSassauer on Twitter.
You can get our podcast because, hey, we broadcast them every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Download the show wherever you get your podcasts.
The The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take and Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.